You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn King, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Joyful all ye nations rise, join the triumph of the skies, with angelic hosts proclaim, Christ is born in Bethlehem.
Merry Christmas, everybody, from your friends here in Memphis, Tennessee, at the Political Cesspool Radio Program. This will be our last show before that sacred, holy, and spiritual day of Christmas, during which we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Saturday evening, December the 20th. It is great to be here with you this evening. We have a show so packed full of hard-hitting information that it's going to be hard to cover it all. In fact, I already had to ask Eddie to take the night off. God bless him. He was willing to do that. And we've cut Winston's segment down from an hour to 30 minutes to try to work everything else in tonight. We're going to be blending in. We're not going to shave off, though, what I feel is very important aspect of our last show before Christmas. Each year we play some of these spiritual Christmas carols that mean so much to me and hopefully to you as well. So we're going to be doing that, but also a lot of hard-hitting stuff tonight. I really had to get creative to free up enough time in our three-hour window to bring it all to you. We've got, well, just for starters, if you've been to our website this week, you know, we have, once again, the political cesspool, been attacked by the tolerance and diversity crowd. This time they're saying that I have played a role in bringing, quote-unquote, hate tourists to Tennessee. Yes, I'm serious. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be firing back against that piece and an assortment of other issues during tonight's live installment of the Political Cesspool. But before we do all that, you know, we certainly bear scars, and we certainly suffer attacks on a weekly basis. We wouldn't be doing our job right if we weren't. We're very proud of that. It's a badge of honor to be targeted by the enemies of Christ in America and of our people. So we don't get caught up in that, but we do like to bring it to your attention when the arrows are coming our way. Keith Alexander will be here tonight eventually. He is stuck in Christmas traffic trying to get past the mall on his way out to the studio. So we'll get to him sooner rather than later. But speaking of Keith, I want to make mention that we had just an outstanding time last night. Before we get down into all of the heavy lifting that I have planned for you this evening, we took a moment to once again share in the company of fine and decent people last night. Keith Alexander, we hosted the Political Cesspool's Christmas party at Keith Alexander's house last night. Now, it was just for, obviously it was a much smaller scale than the 10-year anniversary party, which was open to our audience. This was just for a few people here in the local Memphis area that are among our usual suspects. But it was at Keith's house. And if you've never been to Keith's house, he lives in a house, a three-story house that was built in 1903. It looks like some sort of a medieval fortress. It's made out of limestone. It's just a beautiful, stately, elegant house. I have never seen it look so good. Last night he had it completely decked out with Christmas and Christmas tree and Christmas decorations. It just looked fantastic. And we had some people there, some of whom I have known for a long time and am well acquainted with. And there were some people there that I don't recall meeting before. In fact, a gentleman walked in and he was flabbergasted, I guess you could say, to see me answering the door for him. And he just said he'd been listening since 2004. Now, don't recall having ever met this gentleman before, but he said he'd been a fan of the show since 2004, and he first heard about the show while he was radio surfing through the dial. He lives here in Memphis, of course, so he can pick us up here on one of two AM affiliates that carry us. He was, you know, surfing through the dial and just found the Political Cesspool 10 years ago and has been listening ever since. And I got to meet him for the first time last night, and it's great to meet local listeners who tune in on the AM dial. And, of course, well, all of our listeners are great, whether you listen here locally or you listen on the Internet or however you listen on the phone. I got a message just earlier from someone listening tonight from I-81 on the way to Kentucky for Christmas. So you could be listening anywhere in the country or around the world, and we're great to thankful to have you. But it was great to meet that fellow last night. Another guy that was there, a man that I met in 2002. Now, this is an interesting story. This guy I met in 2002, you'll remember that 2002 was the year that I ran for office. I ran for state representative. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the second hour, and there's a reason for it. But I was running for state representative. This guy, who's been a friend of mine now for almost 12 years, was a campaign advisor for my opponent in that race. And through advising my opponent in that race, he certainly knew who I was. He actually, I think the first time I ever met Bill, his name is Bill, he showed me some of the mail-out pieces that they had, that he had put together attacking me on behalf of his, I guess, employer, you would say. Anyway, he knew I was onto something, I guess, and we've been friends ever since. I guess he defected, in a manner of speaking. Anyway, he was there. He's just a great guy. He's rock solid on all of our issues. We just had a great time. I wish everyone could have been there. Very special to do normal things and celebrate this season with friends and family. And at the end of the day, that is what we do this show for, to champion our people, to champion our culture, to champion each other. You know, we are the standard bearers for Western civilization on AM talk radio. You know, for our people, we are the voice. But we don't just do it here. We do it in real life, too. And whether it's the big 10-year anniversary event that we had back in October, or whether it's a gathering at Keith's house for local listeners and supporters of the program, it was just an all-star caliber of folks there last night. Good-looking, successful, intelligent people, as you would expect. And again, we wish you all could have been there. The correspondence, the Christmas cards, the contributions, the letters, the emails continue to pour in this week, as they do every week, into the Political Cesspool. But we have been particularly inundated here with it being the week before Christmas. Cards and correspondence coming in from places like Sarasota Springs, New York, Centerville, Alabama, Prentice, Mississippi, Cleveland, Ohio, Houston, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, right here in Memphis, Millington, Tennessee, one of the suburbs, New Jersey, Jersey City, Merrick, New York, Chicago, Illinois. As I said last week, your next-door neighbor could be a Political Cesspool fan. It never ceases to amaze me, the diversity of our audience and how widespread our audience is. I got an email this week from a lady who said, thank you. It was a very simple email. Thank you for working on behalf of our people every day of every week. And we do. And I'm always honored that people take note of that. Every day, day in and day out, we are toiling in the venue, in the vineyard. Fortune favors the bold, so says the Latin proverb. Let us be bold, ladies and gentlemen. Let us be bold. At Christmas time and always. We're going to take a break and dive into some hard-hitting issues. Stay tuned.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
So guilty to be playing angelic, uplifting music like that and then have to transition into disgusting stories like this. But we have Keith Alexander on the phone, so that helps things out a little bit. He's still driving into the studio. He got caught up in some of the Memphis Christmas traffic. He'll be here directly, but until then, we have him on the phone. Keith, I was bragging in the first segment. I don't know if you were listening on the AM dial, but bragging in the first segment about how wonderful your Christmas party was last night. And I should make a point to shout out to Matt the Copperhead, who was there in attendance, coming in from out of town to be with those assembled.
Well, look, it was our party, not mine, so pat yourself on the back, too. I think it really went well, though. It was just like that convention we had earlier in the year. It just had a real family feel to it, and it's. I think that's really our trademark now, you know it? Everything.
Well, it absolutely is.
Our audience is family, and we truly do feel that way about them.
Well, they are, and we are, and it's great to have that bond because, you know, at the end of the day, that is what we've got, a tiny band of brothers trying to move a mountain. And, you know, people with lesser odds than what we face have been successful, so we're going to be successful as well. But let's talk about this very quickly, Keith. We have to make haste here. This actually was a story that was brought up last night as a topic of conversation at your party. Barack and Michelle Obama, I had the wonderful opportunity to be a guest on Sam Bushman's radio show on Wednesday. I'm a guest once a month on the third Wednesday of each month on the Liberty Roundtable show. And on Sam's show, he actually tuned me into this story, and we talked about it for an hour. So if you want to go to libertyroundtable.com, folks, and go back to the archive for this past Wednesday and listen to my to Sam's interview with me, we talked about this story for an hour. We're going to talk about the story for about 4 minutes here. But Barack and Michelle Obama, this week in interview with People Magazine, they are still pretending to be the victims of racism. Now, let's set the table here. I'm serious. They are still pretending that they are being held back by racism. So here we have Barack Obama, a man who has never held a job. He rose from the ranks of community organizer to United States Senator to President of the United States in just a couple of years. He won the Nobel Peace Prize based upon things they thought he might do. He has been given, because of his race, a life of privilege that no white person I have known has ever enjoyed, but yet he still claims, and his wife still claims, to be the constant victims of racism. So what passes as racism now in their minds? All right, well, here's what happened. Michelle Obama was in a Target store recently, and a woman, a white woman, didn't recognize her. And because Michelle Obama is 5'11" and towers over most other women, if you've ever looked at her, she could play middle linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, a white woman asked her to help her reach something on a top shelf. Now, Michelle Obama describes this as a racial indignity. Here's what she said exactly, Keith. I tell this, and I'm quoting her now, from People Magazine. "I tell this story," she says, "I mean, even as the First Lady, during that publicized trip I took to Target, not highly disguised, the only person who came up to me in the store was a woman who asked me to help her take something off the shelf. Because she didn't see me as the First Lady, she saw me as someone who could help her." These things happen. It isn't anything new. She talks about that being an indignity. And Barack Obama, of course, chimed in, saying that there was a time that he can remember when he was wearing a tuxedo at a black tie dinner, and someone asked him to get him a cup of coffee. So, you know, as a Christian, I said this on Sam's show, I'm always excited when I can help somebody. In fact, even when I am paying somebody to help me, you know, when we had this anniversary gala for the 10-year anniversary of the Political Cesspool, we paid a lot of money to put that thing on, and we paid for the help there to help, to do their jobs. I always felt almost guilty, and in every situation where I find myself in something like this, I feel guilty asking people to help me. I want to help them help me. Well, apparently that's not the Obama's MO. So Barack Obama, this is racism. This is racism. They call it small irritations and indignities that we experience or nothing compared to what the previous generation experienced. Well, anyway, I've rambled long enough, but here's the thing. This is what passes for racism now, Keith. Being asked for help, being the president and the first lady and not being immediately recognized and people asking you to either help them reach something or to get them a cup of coffee. This is a racist indignity. Now, I'd like for Barack Obama to try being a white person that is constantly targeted to be the recipient of racially motivated violence at the hands of people who could have been his sons and daughters. And then he can get back to me about what really racism is today. But anyway, that's it, Keith. That's what they complained to People Magazine about. People asked them for help. This is a racial indignity now.
Well, you know, I have noticed, and I don't know if you've noticed the same thing, that so many of our so-called black leaders, elected officials, have this kind of King Mumbo Jumbo sense of themselves that basically they are the new royalty in America, and they expect to be treated like that. You know, have they ever heard of the concept of a public servant? That's what Barack Obama is. He's a public servant, and he apparently doesn't like the servant part of that, nor does he like the public part of that. So consequently, he takes offense at being you know, asked to be what he is, which is a public servant. So, likewise, you know, Michelle Obama is tall to begin with. She also always wears high heels. So, consequently, she's over 6 feet tall. A woman over 6 feet tall is unusual, even in today's world of steroids and vitamin supplements and things like this. So, consequently, is it any surprise that some normal woman who is going to be shorter than her Caesar assumes that she's a person of goodwill who might help her? There's no assumption that she's a servant. You know, how many white people do you know nowadays that actually have servants? This is absurd. These people just continue to fan the dying embers of the civil rights movement and these supposed indignities of the past. I actually had the privilege of living in those days. Let me tell you, black people were not nearly as badly treated as they are portraying themselves to have been or as their leaders portray them to be. Quite frankly, we had a much better world back then. We had a world in which morality reigned both in the majority of white families and the majority of black families. You know, in 1950, the black illegitimacy rate was 22%. The white illegitimacy rate today is 25%. Back in 1950, it was 1.5%. It was a better world in so many ways, and they insist on portraying it as a worse world.
And here's the thing,
Keith. I'm here to tell you, that's a palpable lie.
Well, he would not be president if it weren't for white guilt. He had no merit to be elected president. He was elected president because people didn't want to be called a racist for voting against him. He owes everything to white guilt. He owes everything to being a black man and getting the sympathy for whites. And so this is where we are, and it's not just Barack Obama. Oprah Winfrey, who has made $1 billion, she's a billionaire based upon the white stay-at-home moms that support her. And, of course, she claims to be a constant victim of racism, too. And we talked about this on the show a year or two ago. She was on a European vacation. The clerk didn't immediately hand her the most expensive purse in the bag or the purse in the store. And so she said, well, that was obviously racism. A billionaire. She's been held back by racism? No. She's the racist. We'll take a break.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
The first Noel, the angel did say, was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay. In fields where they lay keeping their sheep on a cold winter's night that was so deep. Noel, Noel.
Well, as we said, folks, it's certainly a contrast to play this uplifting, wonderful, beautiful music, the songs of Christmas, and then have
jump
to go
into the cesspool that is modern America,
and then go instantly into some of these stories we have to cover on this particular show. I want to work very quickly on this one. You know, talking about black on white crime, we know that they commit a wildly disproportionate amount of violent crimes, rapes, murders, etc., when compared to their percentage of the population. We have posted for you at our website some sobering statistics from a study entitled "The Color of Crime." I mentioned this last week, and I want to just quickly run through some interesting quotes from the world's most proficient serial killer. A Rio de Janeiro man, the story reads, has confessed to killing more than 40 people for fun, making him one of history's most prolific serial killers. He boasted during a press conference he was apprehended just a few days ago that he derived great pleasure from the exact moments his victims died. He said the more they struggled, the more that he enjoyed their deaths. "I was glad when she struggled, screamed and scratched me," he told the police. He removed their nails to add to their torture. Now, this is a black man we're talking about, a black Brazilian. Now, here's where the plot thickens. The admitted killer insisted he only killed white women and preferred blondes, according to the BBC. He preferred to strangle them to death, but would also shoot or stab them if necessary. He wanted to kill women, white women, not black ones. He followed the victims, studying them closely before he committed the crimes, police commissioner down there in Rio de Janeiro said. "Not the black race," the suspect told Brazilian television station, "because it's family." He went on to say that he doesn't feel remorse. If he goes to jail for 10, 15, or 20 years, as soon as he gets out, he says he'll do the same thing all over again. The maximum prison sentence for a serial killer under Brazilian law is only 30 years. So here you have a black man who says that he has killed over 40 people, 38 of them white, blonde-haired women, for fun. And you don't hear a word about it. A word about it on the news. Now, I know this happened in Brazil, but can you imagine if a white man had said he killed 38 black women for fun and he wouldn't dare kill a white woman because they're family? You probably would have heard about it here. Well, I got to cut this story short because we've got breaking news coming in here, ladies and gentlemen. This wasn't a story that we had originally planned to cover when we got into the studio, but this is breaking news. Apparently, this story almost ties in perfectly to this in a morbid and sad way. Apparently, two New York police officers were killed execution style just a couple of hours ago. I'm going to turn it over to Peter Scoop Stanton, who has Sean Bergen on the line, professional news correspondent Sean Bergen. Scoop, tell us more.
Good evening, everybody. This segment is not sponsored by Weigel Automotive Clinic in Reston, Virginia. Just real quick, Tim and Jamie, help me out, and then hopefully they're new listeners. Like you said before, about 3 o'clock today, two New York's finest were executed today. But we have Sean Bergen, who's on the scene. Sean, take it away. Let us know what happened, who did it, and what's the what's going on right now.
Yeah, Scoop, James, I'm actually standing outside Woodhull Hospital, just watching where that horrific shooting unfolded about 3 o'clock this afternoon. This is what I can tell you for sure. Two cops were seated in their squad car on break at in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn when they were ambushed by a lone gunman who apparently walked up to them and shot them at point-blank range in the head. Those two officers were rushed to Woodhull Hospital, where I am right now, where they were later pronounced dead. Now, as for the gunman, we understand that he fled on foot. He was chased in hot pursuit by cops into a nearby subway station where he ran, gun in hand, down a crowded subway platform and actually into the subway tunnel where we understand he took his own life. He was seen being brought out on a gurney with EMS workers performing CPR. He apparently died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Now, I'm outside Woodhull Hospital now, where very shortly we're expecting a press conference from New York Mayor Bill de Blasio and Police Commissioner Bill Bratton. It is a very somber scene here, a very heavy police and media presence as we speak. And this, of course, comes on the heels of some anti-cop protests that have been taking place here in the city over the last week that actually turned violent last week. Several people have been arrested for attacking police officers there. And there has been a tremendous amount of hostility here in New York between the police and City Hall, between the mayor's office. Many see the mayor as siding with the anti-cop protesters, that he has essentially turned his back on his own police force, and a lot of very, very angry cops on the scene. And from what I can gather, my sources and contacts within the NYPD who are actually calling for the mayor's resignation at this point. So a very tense scene, both at the crime scene and out here at Woodhull Hospital, where we are expecting any moment now a live press conference from Mayor de Blasio and the police commissioner.
Sean, I just want to thank you so very much, and I first want to thank Scoop Stanton.
Say that again?
I hear some unrest there in the background, it sounds, but I want to thank Scoop Stanton for bringing you on tonight. This is incredibly profound development, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to wrap your mind around what exactly is happening right now. We have Sean Bergen, a professional news reporter, television news reporter for many years, live on the political cesspool. As the story continues to break and unfold, you have the execution-style murder of two uniformed, I believe they were, Sean, New York Police Department officers. And you're telling me that the assailant did, in fact, take his own life shortly after the murders. Is that correct? Can you hear us, Sean?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, that man did take his life. Now, we've also getting reports in that this gunman posted some things on Instagram this morning. He may have actually murdered his own girlfriend in the city of Baltimore this morning before making his way to New York. He did post up on Instagram that he intended to go out and kill some cops. In his words, he said he was going to give the pigs some wings, or he was going to wrap some pigs in a blanket today. That along with a photograph of what appeared to be a 1911-style 45 caliber handgun. That's about all I know about this gunman right now. You know, of course, this is a very fluid situation. We are getting information out here in dribs and drabs. And as I said, we do hope to get more here when we hear from Mayor de Blasio and Bill Bratton here at Woodhull Hospital, just blocks away from where those two cops were executed earlier today.
Sean Bergen, live on the scene, reporting as this story breaks. How is the cop that is alive doing, Sean?
Oh, no, both cops were killed. Both cops were declared dead, sir.
Okay, that's what I thought I read, but I'm catching this. I'm catching this on the fly here. Well, let me ask you this, because no other program would ask this, but I think it certainly plays a contributing factor, or perhaps it would, when taken into account the racial agitation that we have seen from the Obama administration, from the so-called Department of Justice, from certainly the media, in trying to paint cops doing their jobs as the bad guys in these minority communities. Do we know the race of the perpetrator? I think that's an important question to ask.
And the victims.
Yeah, I believe he's an African-American male. And he did post on Instagram that he was doing this in revenge for the fact that for the Eric Garner and Mike Brown deaths. Many in that community are highly disappointed by the fact that the officers involved in both of those incidents were cleared by a grand jury. They said they were looking for justice, but I guess it wasn't this kind of justice. They didn't.
This is incredible.
The preferred outcome. So they're not viewing that as justice in their view. And of course, they're going on continuing with this false narrative. I mean, we've seen these demonstrations unfold here in New York with the "I can't breathe" and "hands up, don't shoot." And you know, it's clear. You know. After the investigations have unfolded, that Eric Garner died in the ambulance on his way to the hospital from cardiac arrest, that it wasn't as a direct result of a chokehold. And, of course, as we saw earlier in Ferguson, Missouri, Mike Brown turned out to be, a very hostile man in the act of attacking a police officer, and that's when he was shot.
Okay, Sean, this is Keith Alexander. I'm co-hosting with James tonight. Let me ask you the other obvious question. Were the two victims, the two policemen, white?
No, we don't have official confirmation on their identity from the NYPD, although my sources within the department have leaked their names. One appears to be an Asian woman, and the other a Hispanic male. I believe his name is Rafael Ramos. Again, we're awaiting official confirmation on that from the authorities here at Woodhull Hospital.
Nevertheless, a tragedy that we believe could very well have been inspired by this racial agitation against police officers. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. Come back with Sean Bergen live. What an incredible breaking story.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rain fly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip two Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
Whoa! This is big!
Not just big, it's the Freeze Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale. This month, save 30 to 45% off on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy. Factory fresh stock just arrived, so now's the time to stock up with the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45% off. But hurry, supplies are limited to only the stock we have on hand. Call 866-404-3666. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com. Hurry, the Giant Factory authorized Mountain House sale is going on now, only from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
All right, folks, we got to go straight back into this story. This is incredible to have Sean Bergen live on the scene where this horrific execution-style double murder of two New York police officers at the hands of someone who very well may have been agitated based upon what we know from his social media postings by the... hubbub from the Obama administration and the so-called Department of Justice. I'm going to turn my mic off. I'm going to turn Keith's mic off. Scoop Stanton was the one who brought this story to me. He's the one who arranged for Sean Bergen to be here with us. One of the most profound shows I think we have done, one of the most profound interviews to have somebody on the scene as this is breaking nationally. This will be a national news story. And Scoop, I'm turning it all over to you this segment. Take it away, you and Sean.
All right. Thank you, James. Sean, I was texting Keith the cop, get his opinion or his two cents worth. And he said that the cops might be blocking the entrance of the Woodhull Hospital for Mayor de Blasio. Have you heard anything about that?
That cops were blocking Mayor de Blasio's entry into the hospital?
Correct. That's what he heard from the field.
Some rumors to that effect. I didn't witness that myself. I'm picking some of that up off social media. I know there have been reports of a great deal of hostility taking place between the police and the mayor. I also heard from a friend, a source within the department, that at a promotion ceremony earlier in the week, a man was promoted to detective and walked right past the mayor and refused to shake his hand. This is what I can tell you for sure, Scoop. I've lived my entire life in and around the New York metropolitan area, with the exception of the 4 years I spent in the military, and I have never, ever seen the hostility like this between a police department and the mayor. Things got pretty bad in the 1970s during the Dinkins administration, but these cops see this mayor as being extremely hostile to them, as someone who sides with these protesters who've been holding these anti-cop rallies and chanting for a call for a death to cops. They see him as a direct agitator, and many of them say right now are blowing up social media and calling for the resignation of Mayor Bill de Blasio.
So do you think de Blasio's policy and his treatment of the cops had anything to do with the influence of this dirtbag killing these two officers?
Well, I think it's probably too early in this investigation to tell. We do know, based upon the Instagram postings that this man had posted earlier today, that he was inspired and seeking revenge for the deaths of Mike Brown and Eric Garner. We also just heard live from Police Commissioner Bill Bratton, who said that this man may have murdered his girlfriend in Baltimore. The Baltimore police sent a fax to the New York City Police Department, warning them that this guy was on his way to the city, and the New York City Police Department were receiving that fax at 2:45 this afternoon, right as this man ambushed two cops and shot them execution style in the head from point blank range.
Wow. Sean, what's the PB Patrolman's Benevolent Association or the Patrolman's Union doing concerning the treatment by Mayor de Blasio and his staff?
Well, you know, Pat Lynch is someone I know and have known for years. I got to know him very well when I reported on the shooting death of Sean Bell years ago. This is going back around the year 2007, I believe. So I've known Pat Lynch for a long time. He is now advising his officers to exercise extreme caution. He hasn't gone so far as to urge a work slowdown, but the PBA now is taking a very forward stance on this. They are advising their officers that they have to have backup going into every situation. They are to do everything by the book in an effort to protect themselves. It was Pat Lynch was quoted earlier in the week as saying that, de Blasio is not running a city. He's trying to run an effing revolution here. So Lynch has been very, very aggressive about this. Now, I had a private conversation yesterday with former NYPD Commissioner Bernie Kerik, right after he got off the air with Neil Cavuto over at Fox News. And he was talking about the fact that the average man on the street, the troopers, are totally demoralized. That they really, many of them are questioning whether they should even take up careers as police officers. He says he spoke to two guys who are on the list to be hired, who are really rethinking whether or not they're going to join the department. He said this is having a definite chilling effect on getting good, new, solid recruits into the department. And he says anybody who's got 20 years in is rushing down to file their paperwork to get out of the department. because he said he's never seen things as bad as this, as what we're seeing underway right now.
Wow. And now I read something in the news and the New York Post that the PBA is handing out something for the cops in case they kill the line of duty. Do you know what that is exactly?
Earlier in the week, the PBA distributed a form to all police officers. They could sign this form requesting specifically that if they were killed in the line of duty, that Mayor de Blasio and the City Council Speaker Mark Viverito be forbidden from attending their funerals. Now, there's a possibility we could see that actually play out here over the course of the next week or so when these officers are finally laid to rest. And if that happens, I can assure you that will be a public relations nightmare for this mayor. It will be talked about on every news station, probably in the world.
Right. The same thing happened in Oakland a couple years back, if you remember, the six officers that were killed by piece of human debris. The mayor, Ron Dellums, was asked not to attend, and Mr. Dellums, being a gentleman at that particular time, decided not to attend. What's the feeling of the people in the city? Not the cops, not the mayor, but the people who have to live and work in the city. Are they behind the mayor or are they behind the police officers?
Well, I think a lot of that depends upon what neighborhood you're in. Earlier, I was over at the crime scene speaking with one of my former colleagues, Lydia Weekai. She's a TV news reporter for the local Fox affiliate. And I was asking her, you've been out here for a little while. We're in Bed-Stuyvesant. What's the sense you're getting on the streets? And she said one after another, young black men coming by her news van are all thrilled that these cops were killed. She said she was asked to get reaction from these people to put it on the air. And she told her producer, incredible. She told me that she flat out refused to go on the air with what amounts to hate speech directed at the cops on a day that just an unspeakable tragedy has hit the NYPD. These officers, their families, their fellow officers in the NYPD, and really officers across the country. Because when this kind of thing happens to cops, I mean, there wasn't even a confrontation here. These were two police officers who were on their break, sitting in a car. They weren't even in this precinct. They were brought in after as part of an initiative to help community relations between the police department and the local community here. They were sitting in their cop car right outside of a housing project where, there's a lot of really good people who live in these housing projects who live in mortal terror every day. They're living behind steel-reinforced doors with bars on their windows, and they ask for more police patrols because, because they live in such a dangerous place. And that is the horrible position that these cops are placed in. They're put into these positions where they have to really prevent black people from killing other black people, and quite often they become the victims of this crime. It's not unlike the story that I reported on in Jersey City earlier on the summer with the execution of Melvin Santiago. Now, while we're on that note, I also saw a report here over social media that cops in Jersey City were just shot at. Thankfully, neither one of them were hurt. And it looks like they may have got the gunman in custody. But, my goodness, let's not hope that this turns into a trend that's going to take off nationwide.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have to interject here because I am absolutely incensed to hear what you are reporting, Sean, the way that what you heard, the way the black community is responding to police officers who really, as you mentioned, are there trying to protect them from killing each other. And then they're the bad guys. They're the villains. I want to see Barack Obama.
I think it's noteworthy here, James, and I think it's important to point out that we're talking primarily about young black men. These are young black men between the ages of, say, 15 and 35. And that's a very, very small percentage of the American population, maybe 3 or 4%. There are others in the black community who recognize, the critical need that these cops play in preventing their communities from dissolving into total chaos. I mean, we heard that from Charles Barkley just about 5 or 6
years
ago.
On behalf
of the cops, these guys are, our neighborhoods look like the Wild West.
Well, that's right. Barkley was a voice of reason in the situation in Ferguson, and I commend him for what he said on that. And I appreciate you bringing that up because we certainly want to be fair here. But what I was getting at is, you know, I want to see Barack Obama cry a crocodile tear over the lives of these two lost New York police officers as he did for Michael Brown. Now, if Michael Brown's situation wasn't a case, that should be the case, the standard for self-defense. But yet they found a way to somehow pervert that. Yeah, but I want to see him send Eric Holder up there to New York where you are tonight, Sean, live on the scene. I want Eric Holder to be there tonight, but he won't be. And Barack Obama will not mention this. This will just be another forgotten loss of life. We've got to take a break. We're going to talk to Scoop during the break and see what we can do to continue this. Incredible breaking news here on the Political Cesspool. Thanks to Scoop Stanton and Sean Bergen. Stay tuned, everybody.
On the Liberty News Radio Network.